Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Well, we'll begin today in Fairfax, Virginia, with Democratic Representative Jerry Connolly of Virginia. He's senior member of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. He's also the chairman of the Subcommittee on Government Operations. Congressman Connolly, welcome to On Point.
Great to be with you, Megna.
So first of all, tell me, you recently told Wolf Blitzer on CNN that the House committee would use any and all power in the committee's command to make sure that these subpoenas are backed up. Any and all power. What did you mean?
Congress is a separate but co-equal branch of government. Its powers are stated in Article 1, not Article 15, of the Constitution of the United States. It was seen by the writers of that Constitution as the preeminent branch of government, as a matter of fact. So when Congress subpoenas or requests the testimony or the provision of documents from the executive branch, those requests or subpoenas must be complied with. It is not an optional thing. And for the president to characterize it all as just political is to dismiss the constitutional framework of our government. We are the branch that's supposed to provide oversight of the executive branch, irrespective of what political year we're in or who and what party is represented in the Oval Office or, for that matter, in the majority of Congress itself. And so we have a role to play. It's a constitutional role. I took an oath to uphold that role and to protect the Constitution, and we intend to keep that oath and to enforce those requirements.
Well, so the manner of the enforcement is what I'm curious to hear more from you about, because you had said, again, you told CNN that, you know, Congress would try to do all that it could to enforce these subpoenas, whether it's, quote, going to court and getting the citation enforced, whether it's fines, or whether it's possible incarceration. How would you do that?
The power of Congress is immense. Some of that power is latent, but it can be revived and made very active. So we have many tools in front of us. There are, of course, legislative tools and appropriations tools where we can cut off funding. But with respect to an individual who refuses to comply, we can issue a contempt citation, contempt of Congress, and we can enforce it. We can impose fines, and the ultimate penalty is we can have the sergeant at arms arrest you and put you in jail. We can also go to court to get the subpoena upheld, and a court can then enforce it. And if that's defied, a court can then hold someone in contempt of Congress, which is a criminal offense, and you can be incarcerated that way as well. So the penalties here are very real, and I didn't even mention fines, but fines can be imposed both by courts and by the Congress. And they can be substantial. And so if somebody wants to really damage his or her career or put themselves in enormous legal and financial peril, go ahead and defy a subpoena issued by a committee in Congress.
So most observers see this impasse between Congress and the president ending up in the court system somehow. But I'm still a little curious about the sergeant at arms option. Would you go so far?
I would. Absolutely. This is defending the constitutional framework of our government. And I'm a member of the legislative branch. I took an oath to uphold that constitution and protect it. And I'm not going to let any president defy Congress this way. No president has really done that before. Even Richard Nixon, in the height of Watergate, allowed members of his cabinet and his personal staff to appear before Congress under oath. We heard from Haldeman and Ehrlichman and Mitchell and John Dean and Mr. Butterfield and lots of others who provided testimony before the Watergate Select Committee under oath. And this president is no exception. And his distraction in arguing this is nothing but politics, notwithstanding, we're going to make sure that the prerogatives of the legislative branch are upheld.
Well, so I'm going to come back to your example of Nixon in just a second here, but respond more directly to what the president and many of his supporters and aides are saying, that we've had, we had so much time with the Mueller investigation.
So what?
Well, but he put forth a two-volume report.
Yes, and the two-volume report, Megna, hardly resolves the questions at hand. Read the report. It's over 400 pages. Volume 1 talks about the Russian interference, and it hardly is conclusive, and it hardly is exonerating, because while it says, I can't prove a criminal conspiracy to cooperate with the Russians to interfere or undermine our election, what I certainly found was a lot of unusual activity that I couldn't connect. And he says why. He says because of lack of cooperation, because apps would self-destructed, emails were not penetrable because of encryption, or they outright deleted documents and emails that didn't allow us to pursue the trail. But we do know, and he does document, unusual activity, very unusual and very distasteful activity, in terms of conversations with and connections with the Russians, from the campaign manager to the deputy campaign manager to the national security advisor. And they lied about it. There were over 100 contacts with Russian officials by at least 17 members of the Trump campaign or Trump administration. Now, with respect to Volume 2, obstruction, Mueller all but says he committed a crime. He cites 10 occasions where the president seems to have obstructed justice, and he says, I couldn't charge him with a crime because of Department of Justice guidelines that say he can't be indicted as a sitting president. Then he goes on to say, unbelievably unusual, he says, but Congress can act on it. And in case they don't, he says, a future prosecutor, once Trump is out of office, can indict him. Mm. Now, why would a prosecutor go to the trouble of saying that and leave this trail of breadcrumbs in terms of criminal activity if he, in fact, was not convinced himself that what the president did was to cross a line?
Right. So, Congressman Connolly, I hear you say that that you're taking the Mueller report as in a sense, perhaps a starting point for your further investigation. But you know, congressional Democrats and the president are both, you know, speaking very, very strongly, taking a hard line here at this moment. I wonder, though, is there a slightly more, I don't want to say collegial, but is there more understanding through congressional back channels here? And I'm asking because, as you know, on Friday, I believe, your committee's top Republican, Ohio Representative Jim Jordan, asked the White House, sent a letter to the White House, the White House counsel, regarding former White House official Carl Klein, who beforehand the administration said would not appear before the Oversight Committee. And Jim Jordan asked the White House to, quote, avoid unnecessary conflict and allow Klein to appear, which looks like it's going to happen now. Klein's going to appear before the committee for a transcribed interview on Wednesday to talk about the fact that he may have green-lighted security clearances for White House officials despite some red flags there. So are we actually seeing more forward motion than, what's being discussed in the media?
I think Jim Jordan understood that what Trump did by announcing no one will comply with subpoenas in my administration, we will not cooperate with the investigative role constitutionally mandated by the Congress, triggered a constitutional crisis. And that if there weren't some break in that, Trump was going to lose. I assure you, if you go to court, the courts historically have upheld the right of Congress to have broad powers in terms of investigation of any administration. And so Trump was going to lose that battle, but meanwhile would have triggered this kind of constitutional conflict and I think, crisis. And I think Jim Jordan, to his credit, decided that at least with respect to Mr. Klein, let's give the Democrats something. But I don't think that ends the crisis. The president's words still stand. They are still defying the will of Congress. There are six committees, ours being one of them, that are engaged in ongoing investigations on a broad front, not because we're out to get anybody, but frankly because of misdeeds and malfeasance by this administration and this president personally.
So, Congressman Connolly, I'm just curious about this phrase, constitutional crisis. Regarding the specifics of this moment between House Democrats and the president, have we been here before? And if we are verging towards a constitutional crisis, what does that mean?
No, we have never had a president say that across the board he is directing all officials of his administration to defy congressional subpoenas and congressional requests for documentation. That has never happened before, Meghna. It is unprecedented, and that's why I call it a constitutional crisis, because you are now having the two branches directly in conflict about their respective roles as delineated by the Constitution of the United States. And if we don't uphold the role of the legislative branch, you know, the checks and balances you talked about in your intro will be gone.
Well, that's Congressman Jerry Connolly, Democrat of Virginia. He represents Virginia's 11th district. He's also a senior member of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. Congressman Connolly, thank you so much for joining us today.
My great pleasure, Meghna. Anytime.